It's Saturday morning, and it's 10 o'clock. And that can only mean this is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here in the studio, as usual, on another beautiful Saturday morning. I'm really loving this weather. It's just kind of right in my Goldilocks zone. Get out of the car and kind of feels good. It's just absolutely lovely. Heating and cooling bills, very low this month.
Yep, and great weather to go out and do things.
Anything.
Like long walks, and it's just really nice. I love this.
Golfing, fishing, anything you want to do.
You're not sweating the minute you walk outside.
I'm going to talk a little bit about fishing today, just for you.
Yeah, okay. I'm always game for fishing.
I figured you might be.
We're going to go tomorrow, actually.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, let's see, I suppose we ought to get back on track here and say welcome back to all the regulars. You know, we depend on you always being here. That's why we're in year 11 and plan to stick around. So keep listening, tell your friends, all that. If you're new, either been told about it or happened upon it, try to listen for the whole hour. As among the few things that we will promise you, that if you last an hour, it's most likely that you will learn something that you didn't know. And if you want to talk about anything that we want to talk about, or you want to talk about, or you want to ask us about, just pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255, and we'll put you on right away. And don't be afraid. There are no questions that are too easy, and there are no questions that are too hard. The easy ones make us look good, and you all are responsible for doing that. And the hard ones, if we don't know, we'll get back to you next week on the show. So you really can't lose. Most of them are in between. All right. Lots to talk about today, to say the least. It was a bit comforting in the market this week. You know, last week, we were kind of blah. And I can't say that there's one thing that triggered a good week, but it was a very comfortable good week, and I'll let Adam tell you all about it.
Yeah, if anything, probably should have gone the other way based on the news. The market held up pretty well despite some bad news. We've been saying for the entire quarter that inflation was the biggest risk to the stock market right now, and the reports that came out this week kind of backed us up on that. I mean, they were kind of a real shock to the upside, and not what people wanted to see. But despite that, the market managed to gain. And I think investors are looking at what the new administration is promising, which is less regulation, lower taxes, and really concentrating on getting that price of oil down. And that, that has a huge effect on shipping costs and production costs on so many things. And I think that is why we saw the market do what it did this week and not crater in the face of a pretty bad inflation report that came out midweek. So that's just my theory. I could be wrong, but that's what it felt like to me. Excuse me. For the week, the NASDAQ led the way higher with a gain of 2.6%. The S&P was up 1.5%, and the Dow was up 0.5%. So far this year, all three indexes are up, with the Dow leading the way higher with a 4.7% gain. The S&P is up 4% and the NASDAQ up 3.7%. For the first time in a really long time, U.S. stocks are actually trailing international stocks, with the international index up 6.75% year to date. Didn't see that one coming either.
Did you see who the winner was internationally?
I didn't look specifically. Mexico has had a really good start to the year. What was the winner?
Yeah, you're not going to hear this many times in your life, I promise you. But the year-to-date winner is Poland.
Oh, of course, it's Poland.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah,
whatever.
Maybe the situation with Ukraine and Russia kind of looking like it's going to calm down a little might take the tensions out of the Polish investors.
Yeah,
that's the only thing I could think about what I was reading. And it's not just up a little, it's up a lot.
Yeah, Mexico had a really rough start really rough 2024, it was down over 28%. But in 2025, it's up 12.5%. So definitely some bounce back there. Emerging markets having an okay start to the year. They're up 4.3%. But European markets have been on fire. They're up 10.6% this year to date.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
When you consider what a bunch of lunatics they are, it's really amazing.
They did kind of, in all fairness, they cratered in December. Mm-hmm. The international was down about 7% in the last quarter. And so it is somewhat of a bounce back from that, where the U.S. was off a bit, but nothing like European markets were.
And resilience is good wherever you may find it.
If you were worried that it's just the 7 mega cap stocks that are driving the market higher, that has not been the case this year, really at all. Only one of the 7, Meta, is outperforming the S&P year to date. Meta's up almost 25%, while the other 6 stocks are either up less than the S&P or are actually down. So it is more of a broad-based movement in the market than what we saw in the first half of last year.
Mr. Z is becoming a very wealthy man.
Mr. Z, Zucker,
yeah,
Bird, yeah, one. Yeah. Well, they have had a good start, no doubt. Bond investors have not generally been rewarded over the last 3 years. We've seen mostly negative returns, but that might be changing. In 2024, the bond market was up 4.4%, and this year to date, the returns have been a positive 1.2%. That's just over a month and a half. Long treasuries have not been the place to be, as their returns were flat last year, but they are now up 2.5% this year to date. And the main bond funds that we use are all up over 1% this year, which is a pretty good start after a painful 2022 and 2023. Over 1,000 companies have now reported earnings for the fourth quarter of 2024, and the results have been good. 73% are beating on their earnings estimates, which is way above the long-term average, while 62% have beaten on revenue, which is just slightly above average. Only 6% of companies are raising forward guidance versus 11% cutting, which kind of feels like companies hedging their bets around the uncertainty of the new administration. I know a lot of companies are positive, but they also don't know exactly what Trump is going to do. We don't know what Trump's going to do. So I get that. Beat rates are varying a lot by sector this quarter, with technology standing out at the top with an 80% beat rate. Real estate, energy, and utilities are at the other end of the spectrum, with beat rates below their long-term averages. Only 8.7% of utilities companies have reported this quarter have beat their revenue targets, while over 80% of real estate companies have beat on revenue. I thought that was 8%. That's really bad.
Yeah, well, that's supposed to be one of the most steady, predictable things out there.
Yeah, exactly.
You buy them for steady, predictable, and dividend returns and so on.
No doubt.
Missing their sales targets, that's just crazy.
Yeah. One piece of good news is that bearish sentiment remains high at 47%, which is a good contrarian indicator. So that is that's one thing. With the, you know, they say the market climbs a wall of worry, and that's kind of what we're seeing right now.
Yep. Well, when we come back, we've got to take a short break, and we will have our trivia question as usual. It's going to be oriented around not just inflation, but expectations in the marketplace about inflation. And I think you'll find it very interesting. Don't go anywhere. Stay there. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And as I mentioned before, lines are open, 904-222-8255. And if you want to take a shot at this trivia question, you can call that number. It seems that politics plays a role in people's expectations in certain arenas of the universe. We all know that, but this one caught me a little bit off guard. The expectation for inflation seems to be very political. Over the next 12 months, the estimates by political leaning, Democrats think it's going to be 5.1%, pretty heady. Independents think it's going to be 3.7%. What do Republicans think it's going to be? You're going to have to get pretty close on this one to get it.
I would say within 0.1.
0.1.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree. Plus or minus 0.1, we would be happy to do it. Okay, that said, Other in the market, anything else you want to hit upon?
Well, we're talking about inflation. I just wanted to mention the CPI came in. It rose 0.5% in January. The consensus was a 0.3%. So percentage-wise, that's a pretty big miss. And the CPI is now up 3% from a year ago. Energy prices were up 1.1% in January. Food prices were up 0.4%. So it was, it's not a good report at all. Not what we were looking for, but not a shock that it was doing that. I've been saying that I think it is a real concern that where interest rates are right now, you really don't want to go up. They're at sort of a sweet spot. And so if we see this inflation continue to rise and they are forced to do that, that would not be good for the stock market.
Yeah, I'm not trying to make any excuses for anybody or anything, but egg prices are certainly affecting a lot of things. You know how many eggs people use and how many ways they use them?
I know, we use a ton, and it's costing us a fortune right now.
Yeah, I made myself the million-dollar breakfast this morning. Three eggs.
Ooh.
I shared with Mom.
Okay.
Yeah, and we just don't do that much anymore because they're out of sight. And I don't want to add to the shortages, but I do want to use up what we've got too. So that is kind of working against us. And the other one that is the oil price dropped rather sharply this week. If you have been watching it fall. And it has not translated into gasoline at the pump. And the primary reason for that is a seasonal factor. If you look back at the history of the country, this time of year, going into the driving season, prices tend to go up a little. Mm. And that's what's happening.
They start to go up around now. But not, I mean, they really don't peak out until like June, July.
Yeah, exactly. I think at the 4th of July weekend, you'd probably call that the tipping point where they start to fade after that. So the seasonality is working against us too, because obviously transportation costs are a big deal. And then you get the political aspects of it. The finger pointing and blame game is just so completely atrocious out there. I don't know why anybody would pay attention to it anyway. But it does take some time. Economic policy, if it's a Republican coming in, it's supposed to take place in 5 to 10 days. And if it's a Democrat coming in, it's supposed to take place in 6 to 12 months.
Well, not exactly. During the last administration, it was just deny that inflation is real. There was no inflation.
Right.
Yeah, until Trump got elected.
Well, when Biden started, it was 9.
Right.
According to him.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, more like 1.6. That's another story.
And then he had to develop a vaccine that he had already taken.
Yep.
You
can't trust anything. We've been talking about the BLS and so on, people who develop numbers. And it's archaic at best, maybe out of control. I don't think there's a sane person listening to my voice right now who really believes that we're in a period of only 3% inflation, nor have been for some time.
No, definitely not. It's although I will say it is way down from where it was in 2022 and 2023.
That it is.
Yeah.
You can't see it every day you go to Publix.
No. I think our bills have kind of leveled out, but they're at a much higher level than they were a few years ago.
Exactly. And that's what happened back in the Jimmy Carter and early Reagan years too. The price level went way up and it never came back.
No, and nor do you really want it to, because talking about deflation, and that's not good either.
Disinflation happens in certain arenas, such as gasoline.
Sure.
That's expected. It's a commodity. It varies in price. But you don't want the entire price level to just sink, because then it influences buyers and it influences manufacturers. If you think that you're going to make less money by making another whatever it is you make, you're probably not going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
So there goes the production. If you think you can save money by not buying now, you're going to put off your expenditure for a while. This is common. That plays out, for instance, this week, with what's going on with the budget committee in the Republican Party. There is a serious problem there with people's understanding of economics. And the example, I guess, or the application of it that's probably the most harmful to Americans themselves is the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, which is supposedly an independent, nonpartisan branch. It just happens to tilt way, way, way left. But that's not even the bad part. The bad part is they don't have a clue what they're doing. By the rules given to them, they have to use static budgeting.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, if you increase taxes 10%, you will get 10% more revenue. Well, everybody knows that's not true. If you lower taxes by 10%, you will get 10% less revenue. Everybody knows that's not true. And we know that from Kennedy. We know it from Reagan. We know it from Bush. We know it from Trump. But these so-called Trump tax cuts paid for themselves. It would have been a lot more fun if we hadn't had COVID in there that ruined the spell. But they had caught up. Revenues had already caught up by the time COVID hit. It happens every time, and it's for reasons of behavior, people's behavior. And the CBO is not allowed to use that. And it is harming us right this minute by what's going on in the House. There are some House members who are completely ignorant about economics and behavior and so on. And they have this vernacular problem that is indigenous to Washington, D.C. Back in 2017, the so-called Trump tax cuts were implemented in the form of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. That created wider tax brackets and lower tax rates for everybody, and the average American put about $2,400 in his or her pocket because of that tax cut, which, of course, has been lied about ever since. Well, now, due to the stupid, arcane taxing and budgeting rules, they are set to expire at the end of this year. But there is a fundamental thing that I believe, I didn't get this from anybody else, I do not believe Congress should be allowed to change the U.S. tax code by doing nothing. I think Congress should only be allowed to change the tax code by doing something. They are, half of the people in Congress anyway, are willing to sit there and do absolutely nothing and let the expiration of the so-called Trump tax cuts happen, and it's going to rob every family of about $3,000 in taxes. It's going to impede the economy. It could tip us over to recession. Nobody knows for sure, but it's not the way to run a railroad, in my mind. There's got to be a better way, and that's partly, as I say, the vernacular, too. There's another name for the tax rates and brackets that we have right now. They're called the tax code. They're not called tax cuts. It's the tax code. It's the tax rates. They've applied to everybody for 8 years now. You can't just sit back and watch them change without doing some damage, and you can't say that that's a tax increase, and you can't say that extending that law is a tax cut, because none of that is true. It's an extension of the law, which has not been changed by an act of Congress, which is the only way it can get changed. Now, if you followed all that convoluted logic, what it means is no matter what comes out of this budget session, we're not going to get anything that's that worthwhile. I'm seeing them back off now on the SALT deduction. The least that we were hoping for was the marriage penalty being taken out of it, getting the $20,000. I don't even see that as up for discussion after this week. And, of course, they're going to have to fight like hell to get all of the tax rates made permanent. And now they're giving up on permanent and calling it 10 years. What is wrong with these people? It is an absolute insane way to try to do the business of the people in the House. That is my opinion, and I am sticking to it. Lots more going on. We've only got about a minute before we get into it. I want to talk about a very interesting thing that, to me, that kind of encompasses everybody, and this is one that raises opinions from everybody. I want to talk a little bit about crypto and what's going on in the advertising market now. I don't know if everybody's as flabbergasted as I am, and I think Adam is too, that all of a sudden Bitcoin shot up to $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we've worked together for many years now, when something weird goes on, we ask each other why. And if neither of us can ask why, then you can bet one thing for sure, we're going to avoid it.
Well, I mean, I know why. Crypto has a cult-like following. I mean, people exactly. don't even understand what they're buying.
Exactly.
Bill Gates said it last week. That it's just, it's a lot of smart people that are buying this based on, I don't know, some perception of value.
Yep. And there's more to it that we'll get to right after the break. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
I remind you that lines are open, 904-222-8255, where you can take a shot at the answer to this trivia question. Inflation expectations seem to be polarizing by political leanings. Over the next 12 months, Democrats believe the inflation will go up 5.1%. Independents average 3.7%. What do Republicans think? And you got to be pretty accurate on this one to get it right, but you won't be unless you call in and guess, right? All right, let's talk a little bit more about the crypto situation, I guess. A long time ago, 23 years or so, I got into this business, and one of the first things I decided for myself and my clients is a fundamental rule that says if I can't explain it to a 12-year-old in 5 minutes, it is not going to be in my portfolios, personal or client-oriented. And I live with that and have lived with it ever since then, and I'll never change that. I cannot explain crypto to a 12-year-old in 5 minutes because I haven't found a suitable explanation for myself yet. I just don't get it. I'm going to interrupt this programming for a quick little anecdote that was on the close of the news last night. There is a guy who is trying to buy a landfill for some huge amount of money, many, many, many millions, because somewhere in that landfill is a bag of his garbage, and inside that bag of garbage is his little thumb drive that he lost.
Oh, no.
That has $800 million worth of crypto on it.
Wow. Okay. whose job is it going to be to find
it? To find it? I don't think he cares.
Yeah.
If he has to pay a bunch of people a bunch of money to buy the place and sort through the place and repackage it or whatever, if it's successful, it'll be a great investment.
I mean, this is one of the many problems with crypto, as it was, especially at the beginning, where the only place you could store it on was some kind of drive. And if that drive went bad or you lost it, you were out of luck.
Yep. The safety concerns of crypto were not quite fully explained.
Mm-hmm.
And the other way you know that, because the fraud, the theft, basically, of crypto is in the billions a year, which means your personal little account on your thumb drive or whatever isn't really immune from the crooks out there. And take it one step further, it's not immune from the tax authorities either. And how many of you out there who are interested in crypto or maybe own some know that in the eyes of the IRS, it is not an investment like things that are in your IRA. It is property. It is treated as property, and it's taxed in capital gains and such, and recorded on your return on Schedule D. If you did not know that and you own crypto, you have pretty much violated my basic rule that you don't really understand this stuff yet. You should know more if you're going to do this. Personally, I don't consider it an investment per se. I would never consider crypto as an investment because it in itself has nothing about it that is worth money except someone else's expectations. And I think I might have brought this up last week. Currency has a definition. I took it right out of Investopedia, which is a site that I really like. And it says it's issued by a government, whether coin or paper, and it's legal tender for debts, public and private. That's what a currency is. But money does not have to be tangible and can take several forms. So you could say that a better name for cryptocurrency would be crypto money because it doesn't satisfy all of the attributes of being a currency. That said, It will be a medium of exchange only for two willing partners, unlike currency. In currency, you don't have to get something for something else because you can use currency. And everybody understands that the value will be there before, during, and after the sale. That's good. If you don't know that about crypto, you're probably not doing yourselves any big favors either. And then the latest one, I've been hearing an awful lot of TV advertising for crypto IRAs. And I would just like everybody to know that, like other IRAs that have property in them, it takes a specialized custodian and a specialized account, and it has to be, they have to be approved for what they do separately. And they, because of that, they charge fees that are much higher than other custodians such as Schwab and Fidelity and so on, just so you know what you're getting into. You also can't donate crypto into an IRA. It's not an acceptable method of getting money into an IRA. You have to put currency in there and then buy the crypto. And you can bring it out, I gather, any way you want to, but the taxation will be like it would be from any other IRA where it's 100% whatever. So I just need to make the point to everybody that if you're really serious about it and you want to get into it, and please do it on your time, not on ours, but I'd be curious about anybody who's had good luck with it and how they got into it and why, all that. Just be careful.
Yeah.
It's very risky.
There's a bunch of new ETFs you can buy to get exposure to crypto if that's something that you're interested in. We don't do it. I just don't see the value. I really don't.
Yeah, and one of the things, as an advisor, we know that one of the things that people really don't like, because they tend to complain, is volatility.
Mm-hmm.
And crypto rhymes with volatility, more or less.
Yeah, it really, I mean, it's great when it goes up, but it goes down just as fast. And that is not something that clients and specifically retirees tend to like.
Right. I think it's far more likely that an advisor would get a call from a client when things are down than up. So if you're doing crypto and your advisor is helping you out and it goes way down, which it can do, you're probably going to get a call. But if it goes way up, probably not going to get a thank you card.
No.
That's the way I see it. Yeah. Just suffice it to say that we don't do it. I'm not going to ever tell anybody don't do it, but I tell everybody, if you're going to do it on your own time. Separate account, keep it away from us. All right. We wanted to talk about phishing for a moment. Adam told me a story a few weeks ago that I found, I don't know, just surprising, I guess, about the Red Snapper. And everybody knows, if you do any fishing at all, the season for Red Snapper is short doesn't even really describe it, does it?
Well, so we're talking specifically on the East Coast. So the totally different rules for the formerly Gulf of Mexico, right. Gulf of America. They have all summer, basically. We get, this past year, we got one day to catch one fish per angler.
And coupled with that, you tell me, you go out in a boat and they're everywhere.
Yeah, you can hardly catch anything else. Every time you drop your line, you're
crowding out things like grouper.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Now, if I like snapper. Who doesn't?
It's great fish. Yeah.
But give me snapper and grouper, and I'll tell you the choice I make every single day.
Oh, for sure.
There's nothing better than grouper, in my opinion. So along comes two guys that we're all pretty familiar with, Rick Scott and John Rutherford. And I am not the biggest Rutherford fan in the history of the world. He does represent my district. I do vote for him. But I don't think there's too much excitement that travels around with him. But he's become pretty reliable. And when somebody's doing something right, I very much like to shout it out. So good job to Mr. Rutherford. Senator Scott has kind of always been, in my mind, one of the good guys. Well, they are proposing something called the Red Snapper Act that would prevent NOAA from making sweeping management decisions until the ongoing, here it is, South Atlantic Great Red Snapper count is complete and new information can be integrated. So they're supporting doing a scientific increase in red snapper fishing based on the fact that every fisherman knows that they're everywhere.
They're everywhere. They really are.
Yep. And I like to congratulate people who do something that's user-friendly. I'd love to see the price of snapper and grouper come down. They are so outrageous.
Yeah, they did. I think they loosened up the regulations for commercial fishermen recently, but that but us private anglers got nothing.
Yeah, and why?
Just it's to me, it's just total bureaucracy where it rewards inaction instead of action, and nobody wants to make the call to be the person that opens it up at all. There's so many ways that they could do this. I mean, you could have a fishing license where you get three a year. Or something along those lines that you pay a little extra for. No fisherman's going to care about paying a little bit more to be able to target a species that they want to target, and use the honor system even. And people will abide by it. They don't want to do anything about it because there's no reward for being the person that takes action on it.
It's kind of catch 22, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
All right. 401k people. Just switch back over to good news until the end of this segment. The number of Americans in the private sector who are saving for retirement in a 401k plan just hit 50% for the first time ever.
Wow. Interesting.
Isn't that cool? And a lot of it is being credited to the automatic enrollment rules, which have been around for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you opt out of it, you take a job with a new employer, the employer put you in and take 3% of your account and put it in. Now, you can say no or you can change it or lower it or whatever. But if you don't do it and you don't really think about it, a lot of people are finding out later that they are actually in 401k plans, which leads to a longer-term problem, too, with lost money, particularly in retirement plans. But we'll talk about that one of these days. But a lot of companies now are doing something that I think is absolutely brilliant with their 401k plans. They start them at 3%, and every year they increase the contribution 1% until it reaches 10%. And you don't have to do anything, and I love that. All right, I've got to take a quick break. We'll be back. I'll wrap this up in a moment. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we will go immediately to Good Morning Bosco.
Good morning. Good morning, y'all. Another great program, great show.
Thank you.
You brought up this thing called Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm down here at TIFO, so it's windy and people are driving by.
You're 4x4 here.
So this thing with Bitcoin, which is kind of a, an investment that you can't really put your fingers on, and supposedly it was put together by the government, and it's taken on a life of itself. Is this a new modern-day version of what occurred in the Netherlands many moons ago with this plant called a tulip?
No, you can at least get a tulip bulb.
Well, this is true. No, you do.
Yeah.
Can't get a black one. A black one, but...
It could be easily dubbed Ponzi-like.
It could. I mean,
I don't think it will.
I don't think so either. And that it's a great example of that. But I don't know. There's enough interest in it. I was just reading that something like 42% of all adult males have invested or traded in cryptocurrency. So, or Americans anyway. There's enough people out there doing this that I don't think that that will happen, but could it happen? Sure.
Yeah. Will the government make rules about it? I don't know. I did hear Jerome Powell say this week that the government will not sponsor a cryptocurrency on his watch, and I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, that is good.
Thank you for answering that.
Oh, thanks for asking. Did you want to take a shot at the trivia?
I couldn't even go there. I've found the dime as I'm walking here, so I'm 10 cents ahead.
All right. Fair enough.
We'll let somebody else with a higher knowledge base to tap into that.
All right. Thanks for the call, Bosco. Appreciate it.
Enjoy your day.
Ciao.
It's funny. You know, I still bend over and pick up pennies if I find them in the parking lot, and everybody's going to be doing that pretty soon.
Yeah, it's worth it. It costs 2 cents now to make it.
Did you see what nickels cost?
No.
13.78 cents.
Oh, wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, we're going to think this change thing over.
I honestly can't remember the last time I used change for anything. I have a big pile of it on my nightstand, but that's it. I don't use it. I used to never leave the house without a couple quarters in my pocket just in case, and then I stopped doing it because it was completely useless.
Yeah, I was for decades. I made sure I had 2 quarters, 2 dimes, and 2 nickels because
you never know.
You
never know.
I didn't do pennies because you could always get them. They were, you know, penny a piece.
Sure.
Not anymore.
Nope.
That, you know, there are rules against melting them down, but it's not all copper anymore either.
Yeah,
there's a huge percentage of zinc in those coins right now, so it's not so easy to do things like that either. I just found it kind of humorous, I guess.
I had a couple of things.
Yeah,
I wanted to talk a little bit about real estate just because we haven't really addressed it very much recently. If you feel like there's more homes on the market and they're staying on the market longer, you're right. According to Redfin, the typical U.S. home that went under contract sat on the market for 54 days before accepting an offer. That's the longest length since March of 2020.
And what happened there?
Yeah, exactly. There are now 5.2 months of supply on the market as of January, and that is the most since February of 2019.
That is ultimately good.
Yeah, it needed to happen. There was a real, real lack of supply for a long time. But also, you don't want to see a crash in the housing market, but a slowdown, I think, it was warranted at this point. Yeah. Prices were just going up way too fast and way too high.
Mortgage rates were at 7 not long ago, and they're drifting back down too. And I think the biggest problem with mortgage rates today is the hangover that how home buyers have from the old 2-3% days. It's not unrealistic to get a 6% or 6.25% mortgage, but people hate it because they want their 3.
Of course. Why? I would hate it because I have a 2% mortgage.
Of course.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
And I'm of the opinion that that is strictly a function of time.
In what way?
People will get used to it.
Yeah, I agree. I've been saying that for quite a while. There's a normalization period where eventually you're going to forget about the 2% mortgage because it's probably not coming back.
No, I can't imagine duplicating the conditions that brought it in the first place.
No, and it's also just a stupid business proposition for anyone to lend anyone else money for 30 years at 2%. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I've always thought term life insurance was a ridiculous proposition. Would you pay me a few bucks, but if I died in the next 20 years, you got a whole bunch of stuff? Of course. But from a company standpoint, man, these guys take a lot of risk when they sell cheap life insurance policies. But Americans are reasonably healthy, so I guess it's all figured in. But I've never thought of it as a viable way of making money.
I have a favorite headline of the week, and it was from the Wall Street Journal. It says, America's most famous stock market measure is more broken than usual. And guess what they're talking about?
I don't know.
The Dow. And
it's
they
broken.
Say, so the article is excellent because it says everything that I've always said about the Dow, how stupid of an index it is. It was designed at a time where it made sense. It doesn't make sense anymore. It's moving in the opposite direction of the S&P and the NASDAQ more often than it ever has in history. And because it just does, it's not a good gauge of the stock market or of the economy. It's a horrible index, and I wish they would stop putting it on the ticker on all the main news channels.
Me too. And, you know, it forced a habit, I think. We've always done it this way. Plus, I know from a media standpoint, the numbers are big, and big numbers attract attention.
Yeah.
I mean, the S&P is boring, let's face it.
6,000. I mean, come on.
That is the market closer than anything else, but it's boring. NASDAQ has that kind of excitement now, too.
Mm-hmm.
I remember back in, I guess it was during the 08. No, I think it was earlier than that. I mean, I was pretty new into radio, And when the NASDAQ crashed, it was right after, March of 2000 crash, and it dropped over the next year or so. The old high was 56.80, and I remember talking about it on a radio show saying, it's going to be years till we see that again, because that number was based on metrics that didn't happen. It was based on number of hits on your website. It was not based on the amount of cash in your bank account, things like that. So the NASDAQ had to restructure itself around profitable companies. But, man, when they got it right, look at it now.
Yep.
It is incredible now.
I just wanted to read my favorite sentence from that article because it sounds just like I wrote it. Mm-hmm. The Dow is an awful index that was designed for an era of human stock selection and slide rules and is a horribly outdated in the automated age of index tracking. And that's exactly right. That's exactly why it's a terrible index.
Yeah, exactly right. Interesting. My favorite article this week says, what is a financial advisor really worth? So, of course, that caught my eye. A lot of people know of the company Smart Asset.
Mm-hmm.
It was a startup not terribly long ago, and it's a really good informational site. One of the things they try to do is link up people with fiduciary advisors that are worth their salt. And they came up with over the life of working with an advisor, you would have from 36 to 212% more dollar value over your lifetime. 36 is a big number. 212 is a really big number.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're debating these things and you think, you got to pay these guys all the time, on and on, just think about that. It might just be worth you sitting down and having a chat with it. Let's see. I love this one, talking about taxes. We think our government probably is the dumbest one when it comes to taxes ever. I think India might have just made their stand for dumbest move of the year. They now have a three-tiered system for taxing popcorn.
Okay.
Popcorn with any salts or spices is taxed at 5%. But that only applies when it's sold loose. Picture a street vendor scooping it from a machine, putting it in a bag. It's 5%. If that same style of popcorn comes pre-sealed and labeled, the tax is 12%. But if caramel popcorn is taxed at 18%, it's because it's a confectionery because of its sugar content. So 5, 12, and 18. And the response to why is that the lower income people are probably going to be the ones that are buying it loose.
First of all, you've given way too much thought to taxing yes. popcorn.
You think?
That's crazy.
Oh, man. That's why I catch some of these things. It's good for a laugh. The free filing, direct file from IRS is available now. It's open for business. I still say don't do it. That's the biggest conflict of interest I've ever seen. IRS doing your taxes and then taking your money. I'm not buying it. I don't think you should. And they're trying to ditch it. Some smart people are trying to ditch it. Also, ransomware is back. One quick point from this. There are free websites now that have ransomware hackers or undoers. They've got a name for them, but they are free. And if you want to know one, go to Kim Komando's website, komando.com, K-O-M-A-N-D-O. She's always got something good. Republicans believe that over the next year, we will get by with 0.0% inflation. I will bet anybody right now, maybe a penny since they're hard to get, that will not happen.
Yeah, this is why the market is so great, because it's going to take Democrat expectations and Republican expectations and mash them all together and come out with something that's probably a dead-on guess.
Yeah.
Or a dead-on the number that it actually comes out to be a year from now.
I'm going to stick my neck out and say 2 is pretty close.
2 to 3.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Same channel and all that.